Eleanor said. Too quickly, perhaps, because Theodora turned and looked at her curiously. I don't want to find myself left behind in an attic or something, Eleanor added uncomfortably. No one wants to leave you behind anywhere, Theodora said. Then I suggest, Luke said, that we first of all finish off the coffee in the pot and then go nervously from room to room, endeavoring to discover some rational plan to this house and leaving doors open as we go. I never thought, he said, shaking his head sadly, that I would stand to inherit a house where I had to put up signs to find my way around. We need to find out what to call the rooms, Theodora said. Suppose I told you, Luke, that I would meet you clandestinely in the second best drawing room. How would you ever know where to find me? You could keep whistling till I got there, Luke offered. Theodora shuddered. You would hear me whistling and calling you while you wandered from door to door, never opening the right one, and I would be inside, not able to find any way to get out. And nothing to eat, Eleanor said unkindly. Theodora looked at her again. And nothing to eat, she agreed after a minute. Then, it's the crazy house at the carnival, she said. Rooms opening out of each other and doors going everywhere at once and swinging shut when you come. And I bet that somewhere there are mirrors that make you look all sideways and an air hose to blow up your skirts and something that comes out of a dark passage and laughs in your face. She was suddenly quiet and picked up her cup so quickly that her coffee spilled. Not as bad as all that, the doctor said easily. Actually, the ground floor is laid out in what I might almost call concentric circles of rooms. At the center is the little parlor where we sat last night. Around it, roughly, are a series of rooms. The billiard room, for instance, and a dismal little den entirely furnished in rose-colored satin. Where Eleanor and I will go each morning with our needlework. And surrounding these, I call them the inside rooms because they are the ones with no direct way to the outside. They have no windows, you remember. Surrounding these are the ring of outside rooms, the drawing room, the library, the conservatory, the... No, Theodora said, shaking her head. I'm still lost back in the rose-colored satin. And the veranda goes all around the house. There are doors opening onto the veranda from the drawing room and the conservatory and one sitting room. There's also a passage. Stop, stop. Theodora was laughing, but she shook her head. It's a filthy, rotten house. The swinging door in the corner of the dining room opened, and Mrs. Dudley stood, one hand holding the door open, looking without expression at the breakfast table. I clear off at 10, Mrs. Dudley said. Good morning, Mrs. Dudley, Luke said. Mrs. Dudley turned her eyes to him. I clear off at 10, she said. The dishes are supposed to be back on the shelves. I take them out again for lunch. I set out lunch at 1, but first the dishes have to be back on the shelves. Of course, Mrs. Dudley, the doctor rose and put down his napkin. Everybody ready? He asked. Under Mrs. Dudley's eye, Theodora deliberately lifted her cup and finished the last of her coffee, then touched her mouth with her napkin and sat back. Splendid breakfast, she said conversationally. Do the dishes belong to the house? They belong on the shelves, Mrs. Dudley said. And the glassware and the silver and the linen? Lovely old things. The linen, Mrs. Dudley said. Belongs in the linen drawers in the dining room. The silver belongs in the silver chest. The glasses belong on the shelves. They must be quite a bother to you, Theodora said. Mrs. Dudley was silent. Finally, she said, I clear up at 10. I set out lunch at 1. Theodora laughed and rose. On, she said, on. Let us go and open doors. They began, reasonably enough, with the dining room door, which they propped open with a heavy chair. The room beyond was the game room. The table against which Theodora had stumbled was a low inlaid chess table. Now, I could not have overlooked that last night, the doctor said irritably. And at one end of the room were card tables and chairs and a tall cabinet where the chessmen had been, with croquet balls and the cribbage board. Jolly spot to spend a carefree hour. Luke said, standing in the doorway, regarding the bleak room. The cold greens of the tabletops were reflected unhappily in the dark tiles around the fireplace. The inevitable wood paneling was here, not at all enlivened by a series of sporting prints, which seemed entirely devoted to various methods of doing wild animals to death, and over the mantel a deer head looked down upon them in patent embarrassment. "This is where they came to enjoy themselves," Theodora said, and her voice echoed shakily from the high ceiling. "They came here," she explained, "to relax from the oppressive atmosphere of the rest of the house." The deer head looked down on her mournfully. "Those two little girls," she said. "Can we please take down that beast up there?"
"I think it's taken a fancy to you," Luke said. "It's never taken its eyes off you since you came in. Let's get out of here."
They propped the door open as they left and came out into the hall, which shone dully under the light from the open rooms.
"When we find a room with a window," the doctor remarked, "we will open it. Until then, let us be content with opening the front door."
"You keep thinking of the little children," Eleanor said to Theodora. "But I can't forget that lonely little companion, walking around these rooms, wondering who else was in the house."
Luke tugged the great front door open and wheeled the big vase to hold it.
"Fresh air," he said thankfully.
The warm smell of rain and wet grass swept into the hall, and for a minute they stood in the open doorway, breathing air from outside Hill House. Then the doctor said,
"Now here is something none of you anticipated," and he opened a small door tucked in beside the tall front door and stood back, smiling. "The library," he said, "in the tower."
"I can't go in there," Eleanor said,
surprising herself. But she could not. She backed away, overwhelmed with the cold air of mold and earth which rushed at her.
"My mother," she said,
not knowing what she wanted to tell them, and pressed herself against the wall.
"Indeed," said the doctor, regarding her with interest. "Theodora?"
Theodora shrugged and stepped into the library. Eleanor shivered.
"Luke," said the doctor,
but Luke was already inside. From where she stood, Eleanor could see only a part of the circular wall of the library, with a narrow iron staircase going up and perhaps, since it was the tower, up and up and up. Eleanor shut her eyes, hearing the doctor's voice distantly, hollow against the stone of the library walls.
"Can you see the little trap door up there in the shadows?" he was asking. "It leads out onto a little balcony. And of course, that's where she is commonly supposed to have hanged herself. The girl, you remember. A most suitable spot, certainly. More suitable for suicides, I would think, than for books. She's supposed to have tied the rope onto the iron railing and then just stepped..."
"Thanks," Theodora said from within. "I can visualize perfectly, thank you. For myself, I would probably have anchored the rope onto the deer head in the game room, but I suppose she had some sentimental attachment to the tower." "What a nice word attachment is in that context, don't you think?"
"Delicious."
It was Luke's voice, louder. They were coming out of the library and back to the hall where Eleanor waited.
"I think that I will make this room into a nightclub. I'll put the orchestra up there on the balcony, and dancing girls will come down that winding iron staircase. The bar..."
"Eleanor," Theodora said, "are you all right now? It's a perfectly awful room, and you were right to stay out of it."
Eleanor stood away from the wall. Her hands were cold, and she wanted to cry, but she turned her back to the library door, which the doctor propped open with a stack of books.
"I don't think I'll do much reading while I'm here," she said,
trying to speak lightly.
"Not if the books smell like the library."
"I hadn't noticed a smell," the doctor said.
He looked inquiringly at Luke, who shook his head.
"Odd," the doctor went on. "And just the kind of thing we're looking for. Make a note of it, my dear, and try to describe it exactly."
Theodora was puzzled. She stood in the hallway, turning, looking back of her at the staircase and then around again at the front door.
"Are there two front doors?" she asked. "Am I just mixed up?"
The doctor smiled happily.
He had clearly been hoping for some such question. "This is the only front door," he said. "It is the one you came in yesterday."
Theodora frowned. "Then why can't Eleanor and I see the tower from our bedroom windows? Our rooms look out over the front of the house, and yet..."
The doctor laughed and clapped his hands. "At last," he said. "Clever Theodora, this is why I wanted you to see the house by day. Come sit on the stairs while I tell you."
Obediently, they settled on the stairs, looking up at the doctor, who took on his lecturing stance and began formally.
"One of the peculiar traits of Hill House is its design."
"Crazy house at the carnival."
"Precisely. Have you not wondered at our extreme difficulty in finding our way around? An ordinary house would not have had the four of us in such confusion for so long, and yet time after time we choose the wrong doors. The room we want eludes us. Even I have had my troubles." He sighed and nodded. "I dare say," he went on, "that old Hugh Crane expected that someday Hill House might become a showplace, like the Winchester House in California, or the many octagon houses. He designed Hill House himself, remember, and I have told you before, he was a strange man. Every angle,"
and the doctor gestured toward the doorway,
"every angle is slightly wrong. Hugh Crane must have detested other people and their sensible, squared-away houses because he made his house to suit his mind. Angles which you assume are the right angles you are accustomed to and have every right to expect are true, are actually a fraction of a degree off in one direction or another. I am sure, for instance, that you believe that the stairs you are sitting on are level, because you are not prepared for stairs which are not level."
They moved uneasily, and Theodora put out a quick hand to take hold of the balustrade, as though she felt she might be falling.
"Are actually on a very slight slant toward the central shaft. The doorways are all a very little bit off-center. That may be, by the way, the reason the doors swing shut unless they are held. I wondered this morning whether the approaching footsteps of you two ladies upset the delicate balance of the doors. Of course, the result of all these tiny aberrations of measurement adds up to a fairly large distortion in the house as a whole. Theodora cannot see the tower from her bedroom window, because the tower actually stands at the corner of the house. From Theodora's bedroom window, it is completely invisible. Although, from here, it seems to be directly outside her room. The window of Theodora's room is actually 15 feet to the left of where we are now."
Theodora spread her hands helplessly. "Golly," she said. "I see," Eleanor said. "The veranda roof is what misleads us. I can look out my window and see the veranda roof, and because I came directly into the house and up the stairs, I assumed that the front door was right below, although really..."
"You see only the veranda roof," the doctor said. "The front door is far away. It and the tower are visible from the nursery, which is the big room at the end of the hallway. We will see it later today. It is," and his voice was saddened, "a masterpiece of architectural misdirection. The double stairway at Chambord..."
"Then everything is a little bit off-center?" Theodora asked uncertainly. "That's why it all feels so disjointed?" "What happens when you go back to a real house?" Eleanor asked. "I mean, oh, well, a real house."
"It must be like coming off shipboard," Luke said. "After being here for a while, your sense of balance could be so distorted that it would take you a while to lose your sea legs, or your Hill House legs."
"Could it be," he asked the doctor, "that what people have been assuming were supernatural manifestations were really only the result of a slight loss of balance in the people who live here? The inner ear," he told Theodora wisely.
"It must certainly affect people in some way," the doctor said. "We have grown to trust blindly in our senses of balance and reason, and I can see where the mind might fight wildly to preserve its own familiar, stable patterns against all evidence that it was leaning sideways. He turned away. We have marvels still before us, he said. And they came down from the stairway and followed him, walking gingerly, testing the floors as they moved. They went down the narrow passage to the little parlor where they had sat the night before, and from there, leaving doors propped open behind them, they moved into the outer circle of rooms, which looked out onto the veranda. They pulled heavy draperies away from the windows, and the light from outside came into Hill House. They passed through a music room, where a harp stood sternly apart from them, with never a jangle of strings to mark their footfalls. A grand piano stood tightly shut, with a candelabra above, no candle ever touched by flame. A marble-topped table held wax flowers under glass, and the chairs were twig-thin and gilded. Beyond this was the conservatory, with tall glass doors showing them the rain outside, and ferns growing damply around and over wicker furniture. Here it was uncomfortably moist, and they left it quickly, to come through an arched doorway into the drawing room and stand, aghast and incredulous. It's not there, Theodora said, weak and laughing. I don't believe it's there, she shook her head. Eleanor, do you see it too? How? Eleanor said helplessly. I thought you would be pleased. The doctor was complacent. One entire end of the drawing room was in possession of a marble statuary piece. Against the mauve stripes and flowered carpet, it was huge and grotesque, and somehow whitely naked. Eleanor put her hands over her eyes, and Theodora clung to her. I thought it might be intended for Venus rising from the waves, the doctor said. Not at all, said Luke, finding his voice. It's St. Francis curing the lepers.
No, no, Eleanor said. One of them is a dragon.
It's none of that, said Theodora roundly. It's a family portrait, you sillies. Composite. Anyone would know it at once, that figure in the center, that tall, undraped, good heavens, masculine one. That's old Hugh patting himself on the back because he built Hill House, and his two attendant nymphs are his daughters. The one on the right, who seems to be brandishing an ear of corn, is actually telling about her lawsuit, and the other one, the little one on the end, is the companion. And the one on the other end is Mrs. Dudley, done from life, Luke said. And that grass stuff they're all standing on is really supposed to be the dining room carpet, grown up a little. Did anyone else notice that dining room carpet? It looks like a field of hay, and you can feel it tickling your ankles. In back, that kind of overspreading apple tree kind of thing, that's a symbol of the protection of the house, surely, Dr. Montague said.
I'd hate to think it might fall on us, Eleanor said. Since the house is so unbalanced, Doctor, isn't there some chance of that?
I have read that the statue was carefully and at great expense constructed to offset the uncertainty of the floor on which it stands. It was put in at any rate when the house was built, and it has not fallen yet. It is possible, you know, that Hugh Crane admired it, even found it lovely. It is also possible that he used it to scare his children with, Theodora said.
What a pretty room this would be without it,
she turned, swinging.
A dancing room, she said, for ladies in full skirts, and room enough for a full country dance. Hugh Crane, will you take a turn with me?
And she curtsied to the statue.
I believe he's going to accept, Eleanor said, taking an involuntary step backward.
Don't let him tread on your toes, the doctor said and laughed. Remember what happened to Don Juan. Theodora touched the statue timidly, putting her finger against the outstretched hand of one of the figures.
Marble is always a shock, she said. It never feels like you think it's going to.
I suppose a life-size statue looks enough like a real person to make you expect to feel skin. Then, turning again, and shimmering in the dim room, she waltzed alone, turning to bow to the statue. At the end of the room, the doctor said to Eleanor and Luke, under those draperies are doors leading onto the veranda. When Theodora is heated from dancing, she may step out into the cooler air. He went the length of the room to pull aside the heavy blue draperies and opened the doors. Again, the smell of the warm rain came in, and a burst of wind, so that a little breath seemed to move across the statue, and light touched the colored walls.
"Nothing in this house moves," Eleanor said, "until you look away, and then you just catch something from the corner of your eye. Look at the little figurines on the shelves. When we all had our backs turned, they were dancing with Theodora."
"I move," Theodora said, circling toward them. "Flowers under glass," Luke said. "Tassels. I'm beginning to fancy this house."
Theodora pulled at Eleanor's hair.
"Race you around the veranda," she said, and darted for the doors.
Eleanor, with no time for hesitation or thought, followed, and they ran out onto the veranda. Eleanor, running and laughing, came around a curve of the veranda to find Theodora going in another door and stopped, breathless.
They had come to the kitchen, and Mrs. Dudley, turning away from the sink, watched them silently.
"Mrs. Dudley," Theodora said politely, "we've been exploring the house."
Mrs. Dudley's eyes moved to the clock on the shelf over the stove. "It is 11:30, she said.
"I set lunch on at 1, Theodora said. "We'd like to look over the kitchen if we may. We've seen all the other downstairs rooms, I think."
Mrs. Dudley was still for a minute, and then, moving her head acquiescently, turned and walked deliberately across the kitchen to a farther doorway. When she opened it, they could see the back stairs beyond, and Mrs. Dudley turned and closed the door behind her before she started up. Theodora cocked her head at the doorway and waited a minute before she said,
"I wonder if Mrs. Dudley has a soft spot in her heart for me. I really do."
"I suppose she's gone up to hang herself from the turret," Eleanor said. "Let's see what's for lunch while we're here."
"Don't joggle anything," Theodora said. "You know perfectly well that the dishes belong on the shelves." "Do you think that woman really means to make us a souffle? Here is certainly a souffle dish and eggs and cheese."
"It's a nice kitchen," Eleanor said. "In my mother's house, the kitchen was dark and narrow, and nothing you cooked there ever had any taste or color."
"What about your own kitchen?" Theodora asked absently.
"In your little apartment. Eleanor, look at the doors."
"I can't make a souffle," Eleanor said.
"Look, Eleanor. There's the door onto the veranda and another that opens onto steps going down, to the cellar, I guess, and another over there going onto the veranda again, and the one she used to go upstairs, and another one over there."
"To the veranda again," Eleanor said, opening it. "Three doors going out onto the veranda from one kitchen."
"And the door to the butler's pantry and on into the dining room. How a good Mrs. Dudley likes doors, doesn't she? She can certainly—"
And their eyes met.
"Get out fast, in any direction, if she wants to."
Eleanor turned abruptly and went back to the veranda. "I wonder if she had Dudley cut extra doors for her. I wonder how she likes working in a kitchen where a door in back of her might open without her knowing it. I wonder, actually, just what Mrs. Dudley is in the habit of needing in her kitchen so that she wants to make sure that she'll find a way out no matter which direction she runs. I wonder—"
"Shut up," Theodora said amiably. "A nervous cook can't make a good souffle, anyone knows that, and she's probably listening on the stairs. Let us choose one of her doors and leave it open behind us."
Luke and the doctor were standing on the veranda, looking out over the lawn. The front door was oddly close beyond them. Behind the house, seeming almost overhead, the great hills were muted and dull in the rain. Eleanor wandered along the veranda, thinking that she had never before known a house so completely surrounded. Like a very tight belt, she thought. Would the house fly apart if the veranda came off? She went what she thought must be the great part of the circle around the house, and then she saw the tower. It rose up before her, suddenly, almost without warning as she came around the curve of the veranda. It was made of gray stone, grotesquely solid, jammed hard against the wooden side of the house, with the insistent veranda holding it there.
Hideous, she thought,
and then thought that if the house burned away someday, the tower would still stand, gray and forbidding over the ruins, warning people away from what was left of Hill House, with perhaps a stone fallen here and there, so owls and bats might fly in and out and nest among the books below. Halfway up, windows began, thin angled slits in the stone, and she wondered what it would be like looking down from them, and wondered that she had not been able to enter the tower.
I will never look down from those windows, she thought,
and tried to imagine the narrow iron stairway going up and around inside. High on top was a conical wooden roof, topped by a wooden spire. It must have been laughable in any other house, but here in Hill House, it belonged, gleeful and expectant, awaiting perhaps a slight creature creeping out from the little window onto the slanted roof, reaching up to the spire, knotting a rope.
You'll fall, Luke said,
and Eleanor gasped. She brought her eyes down with an effort and found that she was gripping the veranda rail tightly and leaning far backward.
Don't trust your balance in my charming Hill House, Luke said,
and Eleanor breathed deeply, dizzy and staggered. He caught her and held her while she tried to steady herself in the rocking world where the trees and the lawn seemed somehow tilted sideways and the sky turned and swung. Eleanor, Theodora said nearby, and she heard the sound of the doctor's feet running along the veranda.
This damnable house, Luke said. You have to watch it every minute.
Eleanor, said the doctor.
I'm all right, Eleanor said, shaking her head and standing unsteadily by herself. I was leaning back to see the top of the tower, and I got dizzy.
She was standing almost sideways when I caught her, Luke said.
I've had that feeling once or twice this morning, Theodora said, as though I was walking up the wall.
Bring her back inside, the doctor said. It's not so bad when you're inside the house.
I'm really all right, Eleanor said,
very much embarrassed. And she walked with deliberate steps along the veranda to the front door, which was closed.
I thought we left it open, she said with a little shake in her voice, and the doctor came past her and pushed the heavy door open again.
Inside, the hall had returned to itself. All the doors they had left open were neatly closed. When the doctor opened the door into the game room, they could see beyond him that the doors to the dining room were closed, and the little stool they had used to prop one door open was neatly back in place against the wall. In the boudoir and the drawing room, the parlor and the conservatory, the doors and windows were closed, the draperies pulled together, and the darkness back again.
It's Mrs. Dudley, Theodora said, trailing after the doctor and Luke, who moved quickly from one room to the next, pushing doors wide open again and propping them,
sweeping drapes away from windows and letting in the warm, wet air.
Mrs. Dudley did it yesterday, as soon as Eleanor and I were out of the way, because she'd rather shut them herself than come along and find them shut by themselves. Because the doors belong shut, and the windows belong shut, and the dishes belong...
She began to laugh foolishly, and the doctor turned and frowned at her with irritation.
Mrs. Dudley had better learn her place, he said. I will nail these doors open if I have to.
He turned down the passageway to their little parlor and sent the door swinging open with a crash.
Losing my temper will not help, he said, and gave the door a vicious kick.
Sherry in the parlor before lunch, Luke said amiably. Ladies, enter.
2.
Mrs. Dudley, the doctor said, putting down his fork. An admirable souffle.
Mrs. Dudley turned to regard him briefly and went into the kitchen with an empty dish. The doctor sighed and moved his shoulders tiredly. After my vigil last night, I feel the need of a rest this afternoon. And you, he said to Eleanor, would do well to lie down for an hour. Perhaps a regular afternoon rest might be more comfortable for all of us.
I see, said Theodora, amused. I must take an afternoon nap. It may look funny when I go home again, but I can always tell them that it was part of my schedule at Hill House.
Perhaps we will have trouble sleeping at night, the doctor said.
And a little chill went around the table, darkening the light of the silver and the bright colors of the china. A little cloud that drifted through the dining room and brought Mrs. Dudley after it.
It's 2:05, Mrs. Dudley said.
3. Eleanor did not sleep during the afternoon, although she would have liked to. Instead, she lay on Theodora's bed in the green room and watched Theodora do her nails, chatting lazily, unwilling to let herself perceive that she had followed Theodora into the green room, because she had not dared to be alone.
I love decorating myself, Theodora said, regarding her hand affectionately. I'd like to paint myself all over.
Eleanor moved comfortably. Gold paint, she suggested, hardly thinking. With her eyes almost closed, she could see Theodora only as a mass of colors sitting on the floor.
Nail polish and perfume and bath salts, Theodora said, as one telling the cities of the Nile. Mascara? You don't think half enough of such things, Eleanor.
Eleanor laughed and closed her eyes altogether.
No time, she said.
Well, Theodora said with determination, by the time I'm through with you, you will be a different person. I dislike being with women of no color. She laughed to show that she was teasing, and then went on.
I think I will put red polish on your toes.
Eleanor laughed too, and held out her bare foot. After a minute, nearly asleep, she felt the odd, cold little touch of the brush on her toes, and shivered.
Surely a famous courtesan like yourself is accustomed to the ministrations of handmaidens, Theodora said. Your feet are dirty.
Shocked, Eleanor sat up and looked. Her feet were dirty, and her nails were painted bright red.
It's horrible, she said to Theodora. It's wicked,
wanting to cry. Then helplessly she began to laugh at the look on Theodora's face.
I'll go and wash my feet, she said.
Golly,
Theodora sat on the floor beside the bed, staring.
Look, she said. My feet are dirty too, baby, honest. Look.
Anyway, Eleanor said, I hate having things done to me.
You're about as crazy as anyone I ever saw, Theodora said cheerfully.
I don't like to feel helpless, Eleanor said. My mother...
Your mother would have been delighted to see you with your toenails painted red, Theodora said.
They look nice.
Eleanor looked at her feet again.
It's wicked,
she said inadequately.
I mean, on my feet. It makes me feel like I look like a fool.
You've got foolishness and wickedness somehow mixed up.
Theodora began to gather her equipment together. Anyway, I won't take it off and we'll both watch to see whether Luke and the doctor look at your feet first.
No matter what I try to say, you make it sound foolish, Eleanor said.
Or wicked.
Theodora looked up at her gravely. I have a hunch, she said, that you ought to go home, Eleanor.
Is she laughing at me? Eleanor wondered. Has she decided that I am not fit to stay?
I don't want to go, she said.
And Theodora looked at her again quickly, and then away, and touched Eleanor's toes softly.
The polish is dry, she said. I'm an idiot. Just something frightened me for a minute.
She stood up and stretched.
Let's go look for the others, she said.
4. Luke leaned himself wearily against the wall of the upstairs hall, his head resting against the gold frame of an engraving of a ruin.
I keep thinking of this house as my own future property, he said, more now than I did before. I keep telling myself that it will belong to me someday, and I keep asking myself why. He gestured at the length of the hall. If I had a passion for doors, he said, or gilded clocks or miniatures, if I wanted a Turkish corner of my own, I would very likely regard Hill House as a fairyland of beauty. It's a handsome house, the doctor said staunchly. It must have been thought of as elegant when it was built. He started off down the hall to the large room on the end which had once been the nursery. Now, he said, we shall see the tower from a window, and shivered as he passed through the door. Then he turned and looked back curiously. Could there be a draft across that doorway? A draft in Hill House? Theodora laughed. Not unless you could manage to make one of those doors stay open. Come here one at a time, then, the doctor said, and Theodora moved forward, grimacing as she passed the doorway. Like the doorway of a tomb, she said. It's warm enough inside, though. Luke came, hesitated in the cold spot, and then moved quickly to get out of it, and Eleanor, following, felt with incredulity the piercing cold that struck her between one step and the next. It was like passing through a wall of ice, she thought, and asked the doctor, "What is it?" The doctor was patting his hands together with delight. "You can keep your Turkish corners, my boy," he said. He reached out a hand and held it carefully over the location of the cold. "They cannot explain this," he said. "The very essence of the tomb, as Theodora points out. The cold spot in Borley Rectory only dropped 11 degrees, he went on complacently. "This, I should think, is considerably colder. The heart of the house." Theodora and Eleanor had moved to stand closer together. Although the nursery was warm, it smelled musty and close, and the cold crossing the doorway was almost tangible, visible as a barrier which must be crossed in order to get out. Beyond the windows, the gray stone of the tower pressed close. Inside, the room was dark, and the line of nursery animals painted along the wall seemed somehow not at all jolly, but as though they were trapped, or related to the dying deer in the sporting prints of the game room. The nursery, larger than the other bedrooms, had an indefinable air of neglect found nowhere else in Hill House, and it crossed Eleanor's mind that even Mrs. Dudley's diligent care might not bring her across that cold barrier any oftener than necessary. Luke had stepped back across the cold spot and was examining the hall carpet, then the walls, padding at the surfaces as though hoping to discover some cause for the odd cold. "It couldn't be a draft," he said, looking up at the doctor. "Unless they've got a direct airline to the North Pole. Everything's solid anyway." "I wonder who slept in the nursery," the doctor said irrelevantly. "Do you suppose they shut it up once the children were gone?" "Look," Luke said, pointing. In either corner of the hall, over the nursery doorway, two grinning heads were set, meant, apparently, as gay decorations for the nursery entrance. They were no more jolly or carefree than the animals inside. Their separate stares, captured forever in distorted laughter, met and locked at the point of the hall where the vicious cold centered. "When you stand where they can look at you," Luke explained, "they freeze you." Curiously, the doctor stepped down the hall to join him, looking up. "Don't leave us alone in here," Theodora said, and ran out of the nursery, pulling Eleanor through the cold, which was like a fast slap or a close, cold breath. "A fine place to chill our beer," she said, and put out her tongue at the grinning faces. "I must make a full account of this," the doctor said happily.
"It doesn't seem like an impartial cold," Eleanor said, awkward, because she was not quite sure what she meant. "I felt it as deliberate, as though something wanted to give me an unpleasant shock."
It's because of the faces, I suppose, the doctor said. He was on his hands and knees, feeling along the floor. Measuring tape and thermometer, he told himself. Chalk for an outline. Perhaps the cold intensifies at night? Everything is worse, he said, looking at Eleanor. If you think something is looking at you.
Luke stepped through the cold with a shiver and closed the door to the nursery. He came back to the others in the hall with a kind of leap, as though he thought he could escape the cold by not touching the floor. With the nursery door closed, they realized all at once how much darker it had become, and Theodora said restlessly,
Let's get downstairs to our parlor. I can feel those hills pushing in.
After 5, Luke said. Cocktail time, I suppose, he said to the doctor. You will trust me to mix you a cocktail again tonight. Too much vermouth, the doctor said, and followed them lingeringly, watching the nursery door over his shoulder.
5.
I propose, the doctor said, setting down his napkin, that we take our coffee in our little parlor. I find that fire very cheerful.
Theodora giggled. Mrs. Dudley's gone, so let's race around fast and get all those doors and windows open and take everything down from the shelves.
The house seems different when she's not in it, Eleanor said.
Emptier.
Luke looked at her and nodded. He was arranging the coffee cups on a tray, and the doctor had already gone on, doggedly opening doors and propping them.
Each night I realize suddenly that we 4 are alone here.
Although Mrs. Dudley's not much good as far as company is concerned, it's funny, Eleanor said, looking down at the dinner table. I dislike Mrs. Dudley as much as any of you. But my mother would never let me get up and leave a table looking like this until morning.
If she wants to leave before dark, she has to clear away in the morning, Theodora said without interest. I'm certainly not going to do it.
It's not nice to walk away and leave a dirty table.
You couldn't get them back on the right shelves anyway, and she'd have to do it all over again just to get your finger marks off things.
If I just took the silverware and let it soak...
No, Theodora said, catching her hand. Do you want to go out into that kitchen all alone, with all those doors?
No, Eleanor said,
setting down the handful of forks she had gathered.
I guess I don't really...
She lingered to look uneasily at the table, at the crumpled napkins and the drop of wine spilled by Luke's place, and shook her head.
I don't know what my mother would say, though.
Come on, Theodora said. They've left lights for us.
A fire in the little parlor was bright, and Theodora sat down beside the coffee tray while Luke brought brandy from the cupboard, where he had carefully set it away the night before.
We must be cheerful at all costs, he said. I'll challenge you again tonight, Doctor.
Before dinner, they had ransacked the other downstairs rooms for comfortable chairs and lamps, and now their little parlor was easily the pleasantest room in the house.
Hill House has really been very kind to us, Theodora said, giving Eleanor her coffee,
and Eleanor sat down gratefully in a pillowy, overstuffed chair.
No dirty dishes for Eleanor to wash, a pleasant evening and good company, and perhaps the sun shining again tomorrow.
We must plan our picnic, Eleanor said.
I am going to get fat and lazy in Hill House, Theodora went on.
Her insistence on naming Hill House troubled Eleanor. It's as though she were saying it deliberately, Eleanor thought, telling the house she knows its name, calling the house to tell it where we are.
Is it bravado?
Hill House. Hill House, Hill House, Theodora said softly and smiled across at Eleanor.
Tell me, Luke said politely to Theodora, since you are a princess, tell me about the political situation in your country.
Very unsettled, Theodora said. I ran away because my father, who is of course the king, insists that I marry Black Michael, who is the pretender to the throne. I, of course, cannot endure the sight of Black Michael, who wears 1 gold earring and beats his grooms with a riding crop.
A most unstable country, Luke said. How did you ever manage to get away?
I fled in a hay wagon disguised as a milkmaid. They never thought to look for me there, and I crossed the border with papers I forged myself in a woodcutter's hut.
And Black Michael will no doubt take over the country now in a coup d'etat?
Undoubtedly. And he can have it.
It's like waiting in a dentist's office, Eleanor thought, watching them over her coffee cup. Waiting in a dentist's office and listening to other patients make brave jokes across the room, all of you certain to meet the dentist sooner or later. She looked up suddenly, aware of the doctor near her, and smiled uncertainly.
Nervous? The doctor asked, and Eleanor nodded.
Only because I wonder what's going to happen, she said.
So do I. The doctor moved a chair and sat down beside her. You have the feeling that something, whatever it is going to happen soon?
Yes. Everything seems to be waiting.
And they?
The doctor nodded at Theodora and Luke, who were laughing at each other.
They made it in their way. I wonder what it will do to all of us. I would have said a month ago that a situation like this would never really come about, that we four would sit here together in this house.
He does not name it, Eleanor noticed.
I've been waiting for a long time, he said.
You think we are right to stay?
Right, he said. I think we are all incredibly silly to stay. I think that an atmosphere like this one can find out the flaws and faults and weaknesses in all of us and break us apart in a matter of days. We have only one defense, and that is running away. At least it can't follow us, can it? When we feel ourselves endangered, we can leave just as we came. And, he added dryly, just as fast as we can go.
But we are forewarned, Eleanor said, and there are four of us together.
I have already mentioned this to Luke and Theodora, he said. Promise me, absolutely, that you will leave as fast as you can if you begin to feel the house catching at you.
I promise, Eleanor said, smiling. He is trying to make me feel braver, she thought, and was grateful. It's all right, though, she told him. Really, it's all right.
I will feel no hesitation about sending you away, he said, rising, if it seems to be necessary. Luke, he said, will the ladies excuse us?
While they set up the chessboard and men, Theodora wandered, cup in hand, around the room, and Eleanor thought,
she moves like an animal, nervous and alert. She can't sit still. While there is any scent of disturbance in the air, we are all uneasy. Come and sit by me, she said.
And Theodora came, moving with grace, circling to a resting spot. She sat down in the chair the doctor had left and leaned her head back tiredly.
How lovely she is, Eleanor thought. How thoughtlessly, luckily lovely. Are you tired?
Theodora turned her head. Smiling.
I can't stand waiting much longer. I was just thinking how relaxed you looked. And I was just thinking of, when was it? Day before yesterday? And wondering how I could have brought myself to leave there and come here. Possibly I'm homesick. Already? Did you ever think about being homesick? If your home was Hill House, would you be homesick for it? Did those two little girls cry for their dark, grim house when they were taken away? I've never been away from anywhere, Eleanor said carefully. So I suppose I've never been homesick.
How about now, your little apartment?
Perhaps, Eleanor said, looking into the fire. I haven't had it long enough to believe it's my own. I want my own bed, Theodora said, and Eleanor thought. She's sulking again. When she's hungry or tired or bored, she turns into a baby.
I'm sleepy, Theodora said.
It's after 11, Eleanor said, and as she turned to glance at the chess game, the doctor shouted with joyful triumph, and Luke laughed.
Now, sir, the doctor said. Now, sir. Fairly beaten, I admit, Luke said. He began to gather the chessmen and set them back into their box. Any reason why I can't take a drop of brandy upstairs with me to put myself to sleep or give myself Dutch courage or some such reason? Actually, and he smiled over at Theodora and Eleanor, I plan to stay up and read for a while.
Are you still reading Pamela? Eleanor asked the doctor.
Volume 2. I have 3 volumes to go, and then I shall begin Clarissa Harlowe, I think. Perhaps Luke would care to borrow? No thanks, Luke said hastily. I have a suitcase full of mystery stories.
The doctor turned to look around.
Let me see, he said. Fire's screened, lights out. Leave the doors for Mrs. Dudley to close in the morning.
Tiredly following one another, they went up the great stairway, turning out lights behind them.
Has everyone got a flashlight, by the way? The doctor asked, and they nodded,
more intent upon sleep than the waves of darkness which came after them up the stairs of Hill House.
Good night, everyone, Eleanor said, opening the door to the blue room.
Good night, Luke said.
Good night, Theodora said.
Good night, the doctor said. Sleep tight.
6.
Coming, Mother. Coming, Eleanor said, fumbling for the light. It's all right. I'm coming.
Eleanor, she heard. Eleanor.
Coming, coming, she shouted irritably. Just a minute. I'm coming.
Eleanor? Then she thought, with a crashing shock which brought her awake, cold and shivering, out of bed and awake, I am in Hill House.
What? She cried out. What? Theodora?
Eleanor? In here.
Coming.
No time for the light. She kicked a table out of the way, wondering at the noise of it, and struggled briefly with the door of the connecting bathroom. That is not the table falling, she thought. My mother is knocking on the wall. It was blessedly light in Theodora's room, and Theodora was sitting up in bed, her hair tangled from sleep, and her eyes wide with the shock of awakening. I must look the same way, Eleanor thought, and said,
I'm here. What is it?
And then heard, clearly, for the first time, although she had been hearing it ever since she awakened.
What is it? She whispered.
She sat down slowly on the foot of Theodora's bed, wondering at what seemed calmness in herself. Now, she thought, now, it is only a noise.
And terribly cold. Terribly, terribly cold.
It is a noise down the hall, far down at the end, near the nursery door.
And terribly cold. Not my mother knocking on the wall.
Something is knocking on the doors, Theodora said in a tone of pure rationality.
That's all, and it's down near the other end of the hall. Luke and the doctor are probably there already to see what is going on.
Not at all like my mother knocking on the wall.
I was dreaming again.
Bang, bang, Theodora said.
Bang,
Eleanor said and giggled.
I am calm, she thought, but so very cold. The noise is only a kind of banging on the doors, one after another. Is this what I was so afraid about? Bang is the best word for it. It sounds like something children do, not mothers knocking against the wall for help. And anyway, Luke and the doctor are there. Is this what they mean? By cold chills going up and down your back because it is not pleasant? It starts in your stomach and goes in waves around and up and down again like something alive. Like something alive.
Yes, like something alive.
Theodora, she said, and closed her eyes, and tightened her teeth together, and wrapped her arms around herself. It's getting closer.
Just a noise, Theodora said, and moved next to Eleanor and sat tight against her.
It has an echo.
It sounded, Eleanor thought, like a hollow noise, a hollow bang,
as though something were hitting the doors with an iron kettle, or an iron bar, or an iron glove. It pounded regularly for a minute, and then suddenly more softly, and then again in a quick flurry, seeming to be going methodically from door to door at the end of the hall. Distantly, she thought she could hear the voices of Luke and the doctor calling from somewhere below, and she thought, "Then they are not up here with us at all," and heard the iron crashing against what must have been a door very close. "Maybe it will go on down the other side of the hall," Theodora whispered. And Eleanor thought that the oddest part of this indescribable experience was that Theodora should be having it too. "No," Theodora said, and they heard the crash against the door across the hall. It was louder. It was deafening. It struck against the door next to them. Did it move back and forth across the hall? Did it go on feet along the carpet? Did it lift a hand to the door? And Eleanor threw herself away from the bed and ran to hold her hands against the door. "Go away!" she shouted wildly. "Go away! Go away!" There was complete silence, and Eleanor thought, standing with her face against the door, "Now I've done it. It was looking for the room with someone inside." The cold crept and pinched at them, filling and overflowing the room. Anyone would have thought that the inhabitants of Hill House slept sweetly in this quiet, and then, so suddenly that Eleanor wheeled around, the sound of Theodora's teeth chattering, and Eleanor laughed. "You pig baby," she said. "I'm cold," Theodora said. "Deadly cold." "So am I." Eleanor took the green quilt and threw it around Theodora, and took up Theodora's warm dressing gown and put it on. "You warmer now?" "Where's Luke? Where's the doctor?" "I don't know. Are you warmer now?" "No," Theodora shivered. "In a minute I'll go out in the hall and call them. Are you?" It started again, as though it had been listening, waiting to hear their voices and what they said to identify them, to know how well prepared they were against it, waiting to hear if they were afraid. So suddenly that Eleanor leapt back against the bed and Theodora gasped and cried out. The iron crash came against their door, and both of them lifted their eyes in horror, because the hammering was against the upper edge of the door, higher than either of them could reach, higher than Luke or the doctor could reach, and the sickening, degrading cold came in waves from whatever was outside the door. Eleanor stood perfectly still and looked at the door. She did not quite know what to do, although she believed that she was thinking coherently and was not unusually frightened, not more frightened, certainly, than she had believed in her worst dreams she could be. The cold troubled her even more than the sounds. Even Theodora's warm robe was useless against the icy little curls of fingers on her back. The intelligent thing to do, perhaps, was to walk over and open the door. That, perhaps, would belong with the doctor's views of pure scientific inquiry. Eleanor knew that, even if her feet would take her as far as the door, her hand would not lift to the doorknob. Impartially, remotely, she told herself that no one's hand would touch that knob. "It's not the work hands were made for," she told herself. She had been rocking a little, each crash against the door, pushing her a little backward. And now she was still, because the noise was fading. "I'm going to complain to the janitor about the radiators," Theodora said from behind her. "Is it stopping?"
"No,"
Eleanor said, sick.
"No."
It had found them. Since Eleanor would not open the door, it was going to make its own way in. Eleanor said aloud,
"Now I know why people scream. Because I think I'm going to,"
and Theodora said,
"I will if you will,"
and laughed so that Eleanor turned quickly back to the bed and they held each other, listening in silence. Little pattings came from around the doorframe, small, seeking sounds, feeling the edges of the door, trying to sneak a way in.
The doorknob was fondled, and Eleanor, whispering, asked, "Is it locked?"
And Theodora nodded, and then, wide-eyed, turned to stare at the connecting